and welcome to Crackpot Theories, the podcast where everything is plausible until proven otherwise. And this is our first episode that we are recording remotely from home.
It is indeed.
Thurika is coming to us from Discord, from the other end of the country, because we've been ordered to stay away from each other. Like, not everybody in the country, just myself and Thurika specifically, have been ordered to stay away from each other by law.
Like the two opposites of a magnet.
Yes, exactly. But this is kind of why you sound a little bit like you're coming from a paper bag, because we're having to do this over Discord.
Or in some form of vague bucket.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if it gets really, really bad, I think what I'll have to do is I'll just have to record myself and then pretend to be you and record your dialogue. I can get some practice in now, actually. I can I'm just going to see if I can accurately capture your essence in the next couple of seconds. Wow, that is amazing! Wow, that is wild! No, I didn't watch the thing. Yeah, I think it's seamless. I think I'm going to be able to slice those in just in case.
The friendship is so strong. You treat me so well.
Well, I mean, if you have to record your episode, how could you imitate me?
Well, here's some facts. Let me land that fact bomb on you.
I'm sorry, that was a terrible impression.
I'm not good at impressions. So, what are we doing today, Sinead? What is our quarantine theory?
Okay, well, we are going to be talking about The Woman in Black, the film. Specifically the film. Mm-hmm. Although we are going to talk a little bit about the other versions of the, you know, the book, the play. You've seen the stage play, I haven't.
Yeah, I did. I didn't see it in person, unfortunately, but I did get to see an online recording of The Woman in Black, and it was very good on stage. I would love to actually see it if it ever did come to Ireland or even the UK. I'd love to go see it, if we survive.
Someday we might be able to go back to England and go to the West End and see something.
Yes.
Yeah, that is the dream. We're dreaming low for the moment. But okay, so my theory for The Woman in Black. Well, to start with, I guess, for anybody that doesn't know what The Woman in Black is, it's about a man at kind of the early 20th century, kind of the turn of the century. A lawyer who goes to a village in a remote part of England where he's trying to settle the estate of this elderly woman that has just recently died. And then he comes to find out that there is a ghost supposedly terrorizing the town and killing off the children, or inducing the children to their own deaths in some grisly fashion. He investigates this a bit, you know, because he's very concerned about all of this, and like most people, doesn't enjoy being haunted by anything. And of course, the village people are also blaming him because he's seen the woman in black, and they say, you know, well, it's your fault, she's kind of coming after our children now. But yeah, he finds out that what happened was this woman was the sister of the elderly woman who died. And she'd previously had to give her child to the elderly woman, as in to her sister, because her sister was married, and the ghost had, she'd had her child out of wedlock. And under the sister's care, the child went out to a marsh and drowned in a buggy, and the ghost blamed the sister for letting the child die, and therefore is sort of wreaking havoc on the rest of the children in the village.
Yeah, I remember watching the movie adaptation with Daniel Radcliffe, and it was very spooky.
It was very good. The Daniel Radcliffe version was considerably gorier.
It was gorier
than the BBC television version, which was a kind of a miniseries. The miniseries was very good, but it was the BBC and it was the '80s. So also, I mean, to note as well, the book was written in 1983. But it reads like somebody who's read an awful lot of Thomas Hardy. That's always the kind of the aura I get from it almost, that it's a very Hardian kind of thing, you know.
I haven't gotten around to reading the book myself, but I would love to at some point, because I do love a good horror book.
Yeah, and it is actually, it's a very, very good horror book, which led to, you know, and people didn't like the film when it came out. I thought the film was grand.
I liked it.
Yeah, I think just a lot of people had kind of trouble visualizing Daniel Radcliffe as anything else but Harry Potter. Which,
yeah, he got typecast for a good long while, and he tried to break out of it with Woman in Black, but then he went on to do things like Horns and Swiss Army Man and stuff that were absolutely fantastic, because he's a great actor. It's just people couldn't stop seeing him as Harry Potter for a very long time, but he is actually fantastic. He was really, really good in Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, I think he was really good. That was a really good film as well.
Really weird film, but brilliant.
It was the right kind of weird, you know. It was the weird that makes you laugh instead of the weird that makes you go, I don't want to watch any more of this. But I think his sort of trajectory at that point was like, I think all child stars do this thing where they do like the opposite of the character that they made famous, and then they kind of settle down and they start choosing the roles a little bit more carefully instead of going to extremes. You know, I forgot that he was Harry Potter in the film. I was more interested in watching the children die. So,
bleak.
Yes, I know, but you know what I'm like at this stage. You know, none of this should surprise you. But okay, so my theory on the Woman in Black is that the Woman in Black herself, the ghost, I don't dispute the fact that she is a ghost and she is haunting this village, but I dispute the fact that she is responsible for killing these children. I think she was never a malevolent spirit. She just really liked children and was very accident prone.
Like some form of Calamity Jane poltergeist.
A little bit, yeah. Okay, so, like, you know the way when people are talking about, you know, ghostly apparitions and the things that poltergeists do? A lot of kind of opening doors and closing doors, picking up things and throwing them on the ground.
Moving picture frames just slightly to the left.
Yeah, I mean, if they were able to do anything significant, they wouldn't really be ghosts anymore, would they? They would be kind of half corporeal. So I have to imagine that when you first become a ghost, you have some trouble over the solidity of your body.
Yeah, like they did a thing with Patrick Swayze in Ghosts. There was the whole thing about that he had to practice how to touch things, like with a penny and stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, he did something like that. There's a lot of kind of varying things, but you know, like in the film Poltergeist, there was just a lot of picking up things and throwing them in order to get attention, because they couldn't physically manifest properly as something. Now, I think the Woman in Black, obviously she was able to physically manifest in some way, because the kids saw her, some of the adults saw her. She was there and she was hanging around. But I don't, like, first of all, in the very first few beats of the film with the three girls jumping out the window, I mean, she didn't open the window. She was just there. You know, and maybe it wasn't so much a thing that she was trying to actually kill the children. She wasn't. She wanted to hang out with the children.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, hi, hey. You want to come and play? You know, because she wanted to keep her son. She was very upset when she wasn't able to keep her son with her. She obviously likes children, not just her own. You know, and she does seem to be very angry, but she's angry almost exclusively with the adults. That's who she's trying to haunt. But I think it could just be a thing where she wants to kind of hang out and play with the children, or at the very least, just kind of watch them in their follies kind of thing. You know the way when you watch, you watch a kid doing something and it's really funny the way they go about it. You know, I have an old video of some kids I was babysitting, and one of them is trying to talk on a fake phone, but she's perfectly imitating her mother on the phone, and is it's just like, hello, hello, no, Anne, no, Dylan, bye, and then she picks up, hello. It is just really, really funny, and I could actually sit and watch her do that all day. You know, the same way you'd watch like a puppy or a kitten doing something. They're so haphazard about it, it's just funny kind of thing. And I think that was partially the drive for the Woman in Black, is that she wanted to kind of look in on the kids and see what they were up to. But there's also another factor that you have to consider about small children if you've been around them for any length of time, and particularly if you are the kind of person that small children like to be around. Sometimes that sort of initiates a self-destruct button in those children.
Like, it was like, you're a good adult. Let me just jump out the window.
Sort of, you know, I've had a child that was so excited to see me that they ran out onto the road not looking where they were going. They could have been run over. Yeah, they were just like, it's an end! And then just complete and utter bolted jaywalking right across the road. And it was just, like, I was horrified. I was like, look for cameras, for God's sake! But it's just like that. You know, the three girls in the first few minutes of the film playing their tea party, and they look outside and they see this woman, and she's beautifully dressed, lovely long veil, looks like a sort of a dark princess kind of thing, you know. And come on, I mean, you've had kids come up to you when you're in costume and just, you know, want to hang out with you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially when you're wearing, like, jade fashion or anything like that. They cling to you like some form of moss to a lamp, where it's like, oh my God, you're some form of princess. Let's crawl all over you and touch all of your clothes. Yeah, it's unpleasant.
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, and also bearing in mind that this was the kind of late 19th, early 20th century, you know, these kids don't have iPads or or Nintendo or any of those things. They don't know how to floss because they don't have Fortnite.
When you said that, I automatically thought of the dental floss. And I'm like, what does that have to do with technology?
No.
You know, they're from the Victorian era. They don't know how to floss.
No. I can't comment on their dental hygiene. I am not a historian of dental hygiene, but no, they cannot do the floss dance, which seems to greatly amuse children of this time period. But yeah, you have to imagine that they'd be looking for a lot of kind of outside stimulus, anything that they haven't kind of seen before. So they look outside and they see this floating woman. She looks like a very dark princess. She's got a beautiful face, and she's just hanging out outside the window. And they're like, oh my God, there's a floating woman outside the window. I wonder if I go outside, I can probably float too. I mean, that's half of the plot of Peter Pan.
That's true. I'm like, isn't it a thing with cats as well that they tend to jump out windows whenever they see things that they focus on because they don't realise that they're that high up? So they could be like, oh, look at her, I want to go say hi to her. Oh no, I'm two stories up.
I'll stop. Listen, I took some kids to a soft play centre when they were about they weren't walking yet, they were crawling. And one of them got into the main part of the building where all the, like, the one that's like a tower. So yeah. It's like, it's just like layers and layers and layers that you go up until you're right up to the ceiling. And she got in there and she made her way up to the top, no problem at all. So I had to go in and get her. Like, no spatial awareness whatsoever. And this, like, this was the part of the soft play area that was designed for kind of kids 7 and up.
Yeah. But oh no.
Yeah, but there you go. And then these three little girls, you know, they're having their little tea party. We don't know if these girls were actually schooled. I mean, they looked like they were in kind of a relatively well-to-do house. They might have had a governess, or they might have gone to an actual school. But we don't know how well-educated they would be. That, you know, possibly they don't understand the implications of opening a window and jumping out. And the fact that all three of them did it kind of at the one time. I mean, they did look a little bit possessed when they did it. But at the same time, a lot of the time children look possessed when they're not really thinking.
That's very, very true. Like, if you see a kid having a tantrum, it does look like some form of demon has possessed them.
Well, yeah,
spinning around like Reagan from The Exorcist.
Well, I mean, funnily enough, right, there's like a historical basis in Ireland for kind of kids that had like the likes of autism, epilepsy, or any kind of just ADHD and stuff like that, in that there was an old legend that if you called your child beautiful, that fairies were going to steal into your house and take your child away, and they were going to leave one of their children, and their child was this destructive force of nature that you could not control in any way, that just used to have fits all the time. So in a way it was kind of slightly accepted in that, that's just a changeling. There's not we can do about it now. Oh well, kind of thing. Sorry, go on.
It's just like it just reminds me of an awful lot of those Karen-esque type parents. I was like, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. Sorry. You know those Facebook moms?
Yeah, but I hesitate to speak badly about Facebook moms because I know Facebook moms and they get a very bad rep, really. So I do not join in on the Karen memes. But, you know, I'm afraid so. It's just, you know, I have spent quite a lot of my time around mothers of children. So I always think that they get a very unfair pasting compared to their husbands. We should probably take at least some of the blame there. But that's a whole other discussion for another day. But going back to where we were, I mean, this was also the era when children were meant to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
You know, this was when you left your child to their own devices for hours at a time. If you were well-to-do, you farmed them off on your governess or your nanny or somebody else that would work for them. And if you were a lower-class child, then you probably had a job. So
yeah, they had like the cotton mills and stuff where they used to go in and I think they were called like fluffers or something, that they picked up all the leftover cotton that got stuck in the mill and stuff, because only the children could be that small to fit in there, and it was very, very dangerous at the time, like around that the Industrial Revolution and that.
Yeah, completely. I mean, this is a time period when child mortality was very, very high. And this is kind of why I mentioned the kind of Thomas Hardy nature of the book, the vibe that I felt given it, because in those types of books, they dealt quite a bit with child death. In particularly Jude the Obscure, I mean, the three children in that died, spoilers, but we're not doing spoilers and it's a very old book, but in Jude the Obscure, you got a classic example of kind of what childhood was like. You had a child that was farmed off to relatives in Australia, and then they decided they couldn't take care of him anymore, so they farmed him back to England. And then you had his unemployed parents having to go from place to place to place and being rejected because they had three children. A lot of the books of the era dealt a lot with child death. You had Tiny Tim, you had Nell from the Old Curiosity Shop, you know. So because this is a horror story and because of the time period, naturally you'd kind of pick off the children. But, I mean, children were essentially sitting ducks at that point in time, in a way. Yeah. And, like, when you talk about the deaths that happen in the film, right, the first death is the three girls jumping out the window. Nobody thought to lock the window.
Yeah.
The second death, I think, was a little girl that swallowed lye and hemorrhaged to death.
Yeah. What a nasty way to go, like.
Completely, yeah. But, I mean, here's a thing I think you know about me, but I'm not sure, but I really enjoy watching public service announcements. You know, public information films. Yeah, you know, the kind of the likes of, if you drink and drive, you're a bloody idiot.
I do remember, I think we were at a party at one point, and you decided to show us the PSA of what to do in a nuclear fallout.
Ah, protect and survive, yes.
That was amazing. It, nothing quite like being 1 a.m. after drinking a liter of vodka and just sitting down and seeing what we should do during a nuclear explosion.
Specifically, what we should do with the bodies of the people that died in the shelter.
Oh, God. Is that what we're going to have to do?
No. You know, that particular public service announcement was mostly based on trying to keep people calm. Because none of this was actually going to help you in the aftermath of a nuclear explosion. It was just purely to keep people calm. So, you know, if this did happen, that's not what would happen to us. We'd probably be vaporized immediately.
That's cheery.
Yeah, I thought you'd enjoy that. But
moving along very smoothly.
But yeah, there's a lot of those public service announcements that are trying to advise parents to keep certain things away from their children. Certain yeah. flammable things, toxic things. There was that whole thing about the Tide Pods as well, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Like even today, with our knowledge of what you should and shouldn't let your children do, there is still children out there trying to bring about their own deaths through some sort of harebrained self-destructive streak.
It's like there was that whole meme that was going around about forbidden snacks. Around like bars of soap that just look really nice, and you're like, and the Tide Pods and different kind of chemicals that just, for some reason, look delicious, but you know, if you were to consume any of them, you would immediately die.
Yeah, and I mean, then going on to the third death, then was the little girl who set herself on fire. Like when the lawyer goes in to try and save her, because the house is already on fire. But she's been locked in the cellar to keep her away from the woman in black, despite the fact that that's going to be no good against a ghost. And I have to imagine they know this, but
I don't think ghosts give a flying fudge about locked doors. They're like, ha! I've been spooky lockpick.
Oh, you're coming back a little bit feedbacky. Are you okay?
Yeah, I think the government's found me, but I'm okay.
for now, the government has its hands full. They're not going to bother with you at the moment, for once. Yeah, they're too busy decontaminating our bunker.
Yeah, I miss the bunker.
I miss our the nice bunker, too.
No ghosts would get us in the bunker.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'm really in danger with from now is getting annoyed to death by the dog and the cat. So if you can hear my dog howling in the background, you know what's going on. At least the cat has decided to leave me alone for the day. Normally she follows me around and just shrieks at me. But anyway, going back to where we were. Yeah, so when the lawyer runs in to try and grab her, and she's standing there and she's got like this oil lamp there, and she just kind of looks at him, and then she drops the oil lamp and she goes up in flames faster than she would have done if she hadn't done anything. Okay, for a moment there, my computer decided to have a little bit of an aneurysm, so I've got a second there of just dead air.
By any chance, do you have the woman in black in your house that's trying to stop you from revealing her secret, so she's taking over your laptop?
I don't think she'd bother with me. There's no children in this house. I mean, I am a very childish person, but I don't think that counts. Okay, but anyway, going on to it. I mean, the woman in black was there in the cellar with her, you know, and she picked up the oil lamp and then she immolated herself a lot quicker than the average. Okay, but, you know, these things happen. Maybe the woman in black was trying to tell her to get some water to douse the flames and she picked up the wrong thing and the woman in black was just kind of done with this, because in the film she's just kind of standing there and just, she doesn't even look that malevolent really. She's just kind of standing there going, okay, fine, just do it. I'm sick of this. I'm getting the blame for all these kids dying because they just won't stop messing around with the things you're not supposed to touch. And these stupid parents decided to lock her in the cellar. You know, this is just ridiculous. I think these children should be taken away from these parents. They're obviously no good.
Just picturing her just tutting.
Yeah, just shaking her head and tussing, yeah. And I mean, she is obviously a very angry person, and they put down the reason for her anger being that her son drowned. Yeah, obviously, which is completely and utterly terrible. But she's probably also angry that all these other kids have died through no fault of their own, except that, you know, the grown-ups were leaving them alone for too long. How did that little girl get left alone for long enough in order to swallow lye? How did she have easy access to lye? Now, I do have a historical basis for this, because I read this book that was written by, you know, the guy that played Baldrick?
Yeah, Yes, Tony Robinson.
Thank you. I couldn't remember his name there for a second. Tony Robinson. But he had a whole TV series about the worst jobs in the world. And then he wrote a book.
I remember that, actually. Yeah, it was a very, very good series.
Yeah, it was an amazing series. And he wrote a book for kids that I ended up reading to some kids about the worst jobs that children had. Because back then, a lot of children actually did have jobs. Everybody in your family worked. Because, you know, poor. Very, very poor. But there was one thing that kids used to do, like entire families used to do this, was that they would go on a holiday to some very remote part of England where the air was a lot fresher. And they would make dressmaking pins. Because people didn't really sew their outfits together back then. They mostly held them together with pins. Or at the very least, you know, the great big ball gowns. They were held together with thousands of pins. So you would truck your entire family down to a cottage and you would get all of your pin making supplies, which was just this very long piece of wire, and you kind of turned the wire at the top. And this was finger destroying work done in very dim light. But this was considered a holiday for these people because they were from the city. And the holiday aspect of this was that they got to go to the country and to the fresh air for a while.
Oh my god, that's so unpleasant sounding.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a lot of incidences of, you know, the infant mortality rate back then was very, very high. And also the accidental deaths of children, either through accidents with industrial machinery, coal mining, that kind of thing. But you also had incidences where the youngest child in the family, one of the babies, would be left with the child that wasn't able to work with the family. So in this case, you would get a very small baby left with a 3-year-old.
What?
Yes.
No, you cut out.
Did I? Oh, what you said. Okay, well, where did you last hear?
You've a very young baby left with
a 3-year-old.
Oh, a 3-year-old. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, this was written
up. That's a recipe for disaster.
No, what happened is the baby crawled into the fire and died.
Oh.
Yeah, there's also a lot of, like, occasions when a very small child would be left alone with something that was explosive or corrosive or dangerous in some way. So
matches.
Yeah, not even matches, but, like, you know, materials for making things. I think this one incident was, there's an aspect of flour that is highly combustible. And I think there was a child that was left alone to monitor this situation and they blew up a mill.
Oh gosh, it wouldn't be like the yeast. I wouldn't think yeast would be explosive.
No, it wasn't yeast. It was something to do with I think flour in itself is actually highly flammable. I have never tested out this theory, but I'd heard, you know, rumors. But this is where you get, like, incidences of, you know, a child being left alone with lye. You know, maybe her parents were soap makers. Maybe that's why she had access to this. Maybe they were a family from the city who came down to the country for a while and picked up some short-term work. And her parents, like everybody back then, would have started work at the crack of dawn. They got up when it was dark and they went to bed when it was dark. And both parents would have been working. The oldest children would have been working. This girl that swallowed the lie, she had two siblings that brought her in for help. They're looking for help because she'd swallowed the lie. And they attributed this to the woman in black again. But maybe she was thirsty. Maybe she didn't realize it was a lie. Maybe it just happened because she was being inadequately supervised.
Well, lye has that kind of cloudy white colour, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I
she probably thought it was lemonade or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, something stupid like that. But, like, all of the deaths in it are largely accidental and could happen without the impetus from the woman in black at all. So that's where my theory is coming in, is that she's not deliberately killing these children. Her presence may be inducing the children slightly to their own deaths, but they could have just as easily died if she wasn't there. And you know, there's the whole thing with the lawyer hearing things on the moor at night. He keeps hearing something sinking into the marshes and screaming. Now, we established in one of our other episodes that screaming on the moors can sometimes be attributed to foxes, because they make
wolves, things like that.
Yeah, foxes most likely, because they do sound like a woman screaming, and that's the noise that he was hearing. Like, you hear them all the time. There's also moorhens have this really weird shrieking noise. Barn owls, they shriek quite nicely. And then things sink into the marshes all the time. Like, you put a microphone out in the marshes, you'll get some interesting noises.
Even just the wind and stuff, I'd say, since it's quite barren, it doesn't have a lot of the trees to stop the wind, so probably it's very rattly as well. Whistling might sound like a scream if you're half asleep, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's all coincidence. And then the very last death in the film happens when the lawyer finally thinks he sort of, you know, avenged the death and placated the ghost and that everything's going to be fine. But then he sees her and his son ends up wandering onto a rail track, and he gets down to try and save him, but he fails and they both die. Again, I mean, children do wander too close to the train tracks from time to time. I've had children ask rail tracks, and I've repeatedly told them to get behind the yellow line, and they say, yeah, okay, and then the next minute you look over, they're doing it again.
Even in this day and age, the crossroads of rail tracks in some very rural places, like if you go back down to my hometown, and that we do have a few crossings, they aren't all that protected at all. Like, you could very well accidentally walk across them. So considering that it was setting in a moor as well, and not even a well-maintained moor, it would be very, very possible for them to accidentally cross them.
Yeah, but this was at a train station platform. So the child got down off of the platform onto the rail tracks.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean,
that also happens a lot.
Yeah, do you remember that there was that mobile game called Dumb Ways to Die?
I remember that. Yeah,
they had a song, Dumb Ways to Die.
Ways to Die.
That was specifically made, and the song that went with it, those were both specifically made to warn people, especially kids, to be safe around trains.
If I remember correctly, that was actually sponsored by, like, the Australian Health Safety
Transport Authority.
Yeah, it was definitely from Australia, though, and I think that's great.
Just Australia in general. They don't pull their punches with their public service announcements, which I adore. But yeah, they were obviously having some sort of a problem with people getting down onto the train tracks when they weren't supposed to, so that they had to put out this message. And there's been more than one message. One of the, like, I did this whole panel one time about public service announcements, and there's one public service announcement that I actually find unwatchable, and it involves trains, because you do actually see a guy climbing down onto the train tracks and then the train arriving.
Now, is that the one that has the horrifying leg incident?
No, it's the one you're thinking of, like a British one from the 1970s or 80s.
Yes, and there was just a load of unfortunate children that had an incident with a train track and were left with very jankly legs afterwards.
No, that's the finishing line. I remember that one.
Horrifying.
This was a more recent one. The thing, like, you know, when it's fake, I have no problem watching as much gore and violence as any person does. But this was genuinely recorded on security footage.
Oh no.
Apparently this guy survived, but like the impulse to reach through the screen and grab him and pull him back is just yeah. So that was about the only public service announcement that I actually found borderline unwatchable. But since we're speaking of public service announcements, I would like to talk about one of my favorite ones in relation to The Woman in Black. Because you do not realize how self-destructive children are until you really consider it in the form of a PSA. So there is a little film that was made in the I think it was the late 70s, early 80s. I think it must have been the 80s, but everybody's they're kind of dressed like they're from the 70s, so I'm not entirely sure when exactly it takes place. But it's called Apaches. It's half an hour long. And it deals with a bunch of children who are playing a game of cowboys and Indians on a farm. And each one of them dies one by one. They're killed by some incident on the farm over the course of this half hour.
That's bleak. Oh no.
Yeah, it's great crack.
Is it like Final Destination for children?
That's exactly what it's like. It's just like they go out of their way to say that, and these kids are real characters. They're not like Hollywood kids. They're a little bit kind of homely. They got wonky teeth. They look like kids that you'd see on the street. So you can well imagine.
Real life children.
They are real life children, and they are just messing around. And they've got like proper personalities as well. They keep sassing each other back and forth. And at one point, they're playing Starsky and Hutch, and they put on these American accents, and it's so funny. But you know, it starts off like the first girl is messing around on a tractor, and she falls over and gets run over by the trailer, and she's dead. Second one, I think they're trying to play hide and seek, and one of them falls into a slurry pit. And you know, because you've grown up in the country and I've grown up in the country, that the slurry pit is something you never go near.
No, it is a very, very big no-no. Like, I grew up very, very rural, so there was a lot of farms around me, and that was one of the massive never ever go near under any circumstances. Like, even adults didn't go there, to be honest.
Yeah, because if you fall into the slurry pit, they can't rescue you.
Yeah, you're gone.
You're gone. Like, because anybody trying to climb down there to grab you and pull you out is going to very quickly get overwhelmed by the fumes, and then they'll fall in, and then nobody can rescue them. It's horrible, but there's been a lot of string incidences because of that. And like the other thing is, again, because we grew up in the country, I mean, we always heard of people, and a lot of the time, kids dying in accidents on a farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's very, very common.
Yeah, everybody knows somebody, kind of thing. Actually, one thing that the coronavirus and the, you know, the ensuing panic has reminded me of was the foot-and-mouth crisis, which I don't think you remember, because I am old, very, very old.
I do remember quite well, actually. Yeah. I think I was just, sorry to say.
Sorry, you're breaking up a bit again.
Oh, sorry. I do remember, because I think I was just in the start of secondary school when it happened.
Oh, okay.
All of the news was constantly about it, and it was very, very scary altogether.
Yeah, it was. But my very vivid remembrance of it is having to walk through disinfectant on the way in and out of the school, because they were super, super paranoid about that. And, you know, obviously hand sanitizing stations at every single entrance so that you couldn't go in and out of the school without being decontaminated in some way. But going back to the woman in black, this was a rural village where they didn't have the safeguarding aspects that we would kind of take for granted these days. So, of course, you're going to have a whole bunch of children dying. I mean, Apaches was based in the 1970s/80s, which is around the time I would have been playing on a farm. Actually, no, sorry, I was playing on farms in the kind of late 80s, early 90s. But, like, the stuff that we got up to on those farms, jumping out of hay bales onto lower down hay bales, if we missed a foot, we would have broken our necks.
Very, very true. I remember running across hay bales very, very often as a kid.
You know, even just, you know, hopping into a field that you think is unoccupied and then only finding out that that there's a whole bunch of cows in there when the cows start running after you.
And beware of the bull signs, and then you're never sure which one was the bull.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, like, the bulls in our area were never dangerous. It was always the cows you had to watch out for. The bull was always very lazy. But it's just little things like that, you know. The children, I don't think, ever really needed the encouragement to start jumping out of windows, swallowing things that they weren't supposed to, and setting themselves on fire. You know, this was the Victorian area. They weren't being watched very carefully. They had all these hazards around, and they didn't have the proper safeguarding in place. The ghost is just incidental.
she could have even been trying to just assume that she was a malevolent force because she was dressed in black, but she was probably trying to say out to them, like, don't do it or something. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, even back then, like, there were people who dressed all in black out of a fashion choice, you know, especially if you were lower class as well, like, if you didn't have very much money, you dressed in very dark colours because it disguised the sheer amount of mud that you were walking around in.
Yeah, you wouldn't notice a wine stain on a black shirt, like.
Yeah, exactly. Just all these little things. I mean, they tried to make out like she was wearing funeral garb because she was constantly mourning for her son. And, you know, that's also a possibility. But, like, they tried to make that look spooky in its own way. It's like, oh, she's the woman in black. She must be avoided, for she is forever in mourning and brings death wherever she goes. No, like, you know, just the fact that there is a ghost in your town, you know, that's cool and all, but your children were already in danger because they're not being supervised very well, you know? And the fact that you decided to try and protect your child by locking them in the cellar where you kept all the highly flammable stuff.
It was an accident waiting to happen, really.
It was very much so. And like I said, children do have that bit of a self-destructive streak because they, you know, there's the big difference between kind of like a childhood fears and then adult fears. And I've said this multiple times, but there's things that I used to watch as a kid that I can't watch anymore as an adult because it's just nightmare inducing. Your fears grow with you as a grown up. So The Woman in Black, I mean, that is an adult's terror, really. Now, a child would consider the ghost aspect of it scarier than the whole child dying thing scary. But for an adult, yeah, your children dying is one of the scariest things imaginable.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it must be like. It must be absolutely horrendous.
Completely.
Unbelievably life-changing, horrendous. Like.
Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, I mean, child mortality was a big theme around that time period anyway, because child mortality was ridiculously high. It always had been. I mean, you had the chimney sweeps in London being shoved up the chimneys and developing black lung by the time they were like 8, and then dying because they got cuts in their feet because they couldn't afford shoes. And the only reason that, you know, nobody was horrified about these kids dying is because these kids had no one to look after them.
That's really sad.
It's really sad, but like I said, it was a very sad time period. And I think just the fact that it was written in 1983 almost adds a little bit of an extra aspect to that, in that now, looking back on it, we realise how many hazards children were surrounded by back then. And it sort of almost does induce a little bit of terror there, but I mean, you can't just sit down and write a book about all these children died of all these accidents and make it interesting. So they had to add the ghost aspect of it to make it spooky. But it's entirely possible that, you know, The Woman in Black actually has nothing to do with these children dying, that this was already like in Final Destination, these children were already on death's list. The Woman in Black just happened to be there. You know?
It was just unfortunate timing.
Yeah, exactly. She was coincidentally in, you know, or maybe it's the Jessica Fletcher thing. Maybe she was the Grim Reaper and she was coming to collect their souls. Who knows?
That's very possible, very possible. She was in black, so it would make sense.
Yeah. I would really like to see the stage version. I looked around for the stage version that you told me about, but I couldn't find it, unfortunately. The funny thing is that when I went to London that time in February, I was actually going to go see it, but then I didn't have enough time and I was just like, oh, well, I'll be going back to London sometime soon. So I can just catch it then.
Yeah.
And then this happened.
Like, we had plans to go to London, I think it was in May. We were supposed to go to France next month, and that's not happening, and we were supposed to go to London again to see the Book of Mormon.
Oh, yeah.
But thankfully, they're actually coming to Dublin in December, which we got tickets to go see, but that's really, really hoping if it's still ongoing. We don't know what the situation is going to be that far in advance, but fingers crossed everything is kind of calmed down by December.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't think it's going to calm down as such, but I think we'll have slightly more freedom by then. Well, you see, at the moment, there's a lot of people who aren't really taking it very seriously that I just am seeing, and I'm having to take it very, very seriously because I still have to leave the house every now and then to pick up prescriptions and things like that, and, you know, obviously food. And it's really, really difficult because I'm tiptoeing around the place like Typhoid Mary, just trying not to either get infected or be infected. So I'm giving, like, a wide berth to absolutely everybody that I encounter. I'm trying to keep, like, 2 meters between myself and everybody else. And it's really hard, even for, like, you know... Huh? What? We lost you. This part of the podcast is really lonely. She's gone and she's not talking to me. Until she comes back, I'm just going to have to pretend to be her.
I couldn't hear you for a few minutes. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. It was runnery. I think maybe your internet cut out just slightly.
It's very possible. There is 4 of us currently in my house that are all working remote and all using the computers at once, so our internet is terrible.
Oh, God. This is so hard. When I got this mic, because I needed to get a proper recording mic in order to do this remotely, like, there was a couple of people, like, in Power City that were just not observing the 2 meter distance thing, and I just kept glaring at them, just go, stay away from me.
I feel a little bit like the baby from Spirited Away. Anytime somebody comes near me, it's like, you came in here with your germs to make me sick. I'm just like that baby under a big pile of pillows.
Aww.
That's basically me.
What's your next cosplay?
I have an autoimmune disorder, so I have an excuse to be basically at the door with the cross, keeping people away, you foul demons.
Well, me too, actually. Thankfully now I have a sewing instruction on how to make your own face mask, so I think I'm going to get out of the sewing machine and just make myself one, so that the next time I have to go out, I have some measure of protection, and that people have some measure of protection against me, because if either of us pick up this virus, we are going to the ER.
Yeah, it's I'm one of those unfortunate people that have the underlying conditions, and I think you're the same, where, yeah, you know, when it's like, oh, it's only at risk of the elderly and those with underlying, like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
We may have youth on our side, but our health is questionable. I really do hope that our lovely, lovely listeners do forgive our terrible recording quality just for the next while, and I really hope everybody is staying responsible and safe, and all of your loved ones are also responsible and safe. It's a very scary time at the moment. It's unprecedented in living history, so we all hope anyone that does listen is very safe, and we wish everyone the very, very best.
Yes, of course. Well, we'll sign off on this episode now. So, from Crackpot Theories, this has been another very crackpot theory, because we are both cracked at the moment, and we are going potty, because we are staying inside all the time. So we are extra crackpot this weather, really.
We're on Spotify, iTunes. You can check us out on Twitter if you want to send us any comments or theories or anything else. Please do pop onto Twitter and say hello to us. We love chatting to people, and especially at this time of quarantine, it's always fun to have some social interactions with people that you don't live with. So do reach out to us.
We are also now on TikTok. I just started TikTok for my stop motion stuff, because I am slowly going insane. And TikTok is a lot more fun than I thought it actually was. So listen out for that, because I am trying to animate some clips from our episodes, because it's a lot of fun. Also, if you could leave us a review somewhere, if you've enjoyed our work, then we would really appreciate it because it helps people find the podcast. Is there any other shout outs I need to give out now? No, that's
shout out to Discord.
Shout out to who?
To Discord.
Oh yes, of course. Discord has enabled this this episode for better or for worse.
This wonderful train wreck.
Anyway, the truth is a lot weirder than you think. Thanks for listening in, and I hope you join us next time. Good night.
See you later.